Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello, and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. We have a great show for you lined up today. Over the last few months, we've had some really great guests on the show, to be fair. We've had Victor Matfield, John De Villiers, Conan O'Donnell from New Zealand, Drew Mitchell in Australia, Simon Zeebone, Finn Russell from Paris, Ian McKinley and Michael Bradley from Italy, Simon O'Keefe from New York. Jesus, we've been all over the place. Mike Brown in England and James Hook in Wales. Well, Jesus, international or what? But this week we're going closer to home because our next guest is about literally 120 metres from me right now, marinating across the road, David Kilcoyne. Is very excited to come on the show, so we can't wait for that in a few minutes.
Yeah, we have also got our favorite penguin. We don't like to differentiate between our penguins. We love them all the same, but we like Sam Brown the best.
I think it's because you're more familiar. Like you might like your older child a bit more than your youngest because you're more familiar with them, right?
Potentially, but there's also a bit of a novelty with the new one as well. You get a bit fed up with the older one.
Okay, so maybe after this one, we'll get fed up with Sam.
Maybe. That's the way to keep our penguins on their toes.
So explain who Sam was again.
So Sam, I felt like we really hit it off with Sam. We did, we reviewed Leon the week when Sam was on. And we were talking like we were an authority on movies. And then afterwards, Sam revealed to us that he's a documentary filmmaker, and which was embarrassing from our point of view. So we might get him to review our last few weeks' reviews, which would be interesting to hear if there's anything credible in anything that we've said. And also he'd be able to tell us a little bit, because we're coming out of that lockdown stage now where the end is in sight. You might only get another couple of weeks like binging on TV and kind of just drinking it in and doing what you do best. Barry, someone drew my attention to that at the weekend, actually. Barry was like, you know what? It's so reassuring to have someone when we're going into lockdown. Barry was like, I've got this. Hold my beer. So a couple more weeks, we'll just get a bit of direction from Sam.
His wife is due a baby this week, so I texted him last night to request maybe a home birth live on the show. Speed it up. So stay tuned, folks. It could be a first.
It's an exclusive.
Yeah. He said he'd see what he could do anyway. Deadly stuff. Sure, we'll get Sam on later on. We'll get Killer on in a few minutes. But obviously, each week our show is going out on YouTube and we now have over 800 subscribers. Thank you very much for that. So keep those coming and keep spreading the word, Penguins. But finally, we have some rugby to talk about. Finally, New Zealand as a country have nailed the handling of the COVID-19 crisis. And on Saturday, they declared that they had gone 22 days without any confirmed cases. And then to celebrate that, they had a stadium packed to the rafters for the first of the Super Rugby Aotearoa game.
I think it's hard to say that without going full Maori. Aotearoa! And it's another one of those words. Like, so obviously we both mispronounced that again, but we're getting a lot more familiar with it. And any other podcast would have presented themselves as experts in Aotearoa, whatever you call it. But not us. We're honest.
Zero effort gone into it. It has too many vowels. I just can't comprehend something with that many any vowels in it.
Well, that's the thing with the Maori language. There's too many vowels. So if you ask me.
Welsh have too many consonants. The feckin' Maoris have too many vowels. But apart from that, it was absolutely spectacular. I was glued to it. Highlanders versus the Chiefs, and then that was in Dunedin, and then the Blues versus the Hurricanes in Auckland. My goodness, it was a fine example of live sport and live watching of sport because, I don't know, it was ecstatic. The speeches at the start, the crack. Everyone was there, obviously, to watch sport, but it was a social gathering of just pure crack, banter and entertainment. And although it was 8 o'clock in the morning here, I was leaping around the sitting room. And yeah, what an advertisement for New Zealand. Have you seen that a lot of Americans apparently are watching what's going on over there and how well they've handled everything? And they're now starting to try and buy tons of property and getting, you know, basically move to New Zealand. I don't know. How.
Is that
mental?
Is that right? Is that actually what, is that what they're doing?
Yeah, they're like going, Jesus, look at this place. Imagine being a Kiwi. You'd be like, oh, Jesus.
No.
Shut up. You know, like, in fairness, they have done an unbelievable job. And what's the Jadina Ardern, the prime minister, like, she's obviously the best.
Too many vials,
but she's the best prime minister in the world. And as well a job as she's doing, if I was a Kiwi, I'd be like, shut up a little bit, will you?
Yes, say nothing.
Tone it down. We don't want like millions of Yanks moving over here. It's chaos over there. We're having great crack here. We're all just happy out, doing a little bit of surfing, doing our dances and playing a little bit of rugby. We're having the crack and we're sound.
I don't know. The other side of this is that they're kind of asking for it a little bit.
Some of them are.
Because I was torn watching it, and I was thinking this is an amazing occasion. Obviously, with all what's going on over the last couple of months, and these guys have done it right, and they're getting what they deserve. But I thought they were a little smug, just a little bit. We're back playing rugby. What are you guys doing?
I was
still like, watching Netflix, are you?
It's like if you're ever in primary school and your teacher is probably too hungover to do any work with you and gives you a bit of classwork to do, and it's simple, and you're like, fucking simple. And you just kind of get through it for the first 2 minutes, then you can just color, you can just draw or something for the next half an hour. And some gold bag in your class goes, finished. And then teacher's like, oh, really? And you're like, shut up, will you? Shut up. Or if, here's more closer, if you're on a stag party, right? And on the second day of a stag party, you know, that day, and like you're getting into the swing of it, but there's some crew of the stag who've gone very hard that morning. They've gone, started early, gone out getting loose by 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, and then by 4 o'clock they're absolute potholes, and they're trying to, you know you're not going to get in anywhere, so you get a little splinter group, 4 or 5, and you go off and you find this corner pub just right down the bottom of the world, and you just have lovely crack there, and you're just like, this is like the fire is in the corner, and this, you know, there's a match on the television. You're all watching the match. It's like, yes, and there's creamy pints, a few nice birds in the corner. You're kind of chatting up. And then one of you sends a picture of what you're doing to the WhatsApp group at around 6 o'clock. And then everyone from the stag comes piling in.
Ruined.
Fucking bananas. Knocking over tables. Just wrecking the place, gets you kicked out, and it's all ruined.
That's the first half of that is what happened on Chris Henry's stag. It was Munich, and it was like one of the, what do you call that, like festival over there. Everybody, what is it?
Oktoberfest.
Yeah. So everybody's going mental at that. And then we were there for the first while, and then myself, and because I've got no stamina. So do that for a while, and then I'm a wee bit tired. Go for a lie down. but fortunately for me, Robbie Diak and Rob Herring were both on the exact same page. So we just took ourselves off. We went and got a coffee. We went on TripAdvisor and found like the most the number one tourist attraction in Munich. And there was a static wave on a river. And like a bridge overlooking it, so all these guys surfing. We had a lovely morning. It was lovely. And then
you're Australia, man. You're Australia. You're not even New Zealand.
Yeah, I know.
You're on a different stag. To be fair, I'm probably the lads who go too hard in the morning.
Yeah, yes.
And ruin it for everyone.
Yeah, I was at a Zoom stag on Friday night.
What?
Yes, I know. It was as good as a Zoom stag could be. It's Anna's brother's wedding. Obviously, got like postponed there a couple of months ago because of everything. And then, so they're getting married in a couple of weeks' time. and we just had to make do. Just everybody went around telling stories, and then like, okay, folks, see you all at the wedding. Close your laptops. Was it
that awkward moment of trying to leave the Zoom call when
yes,
trying to find your window when everyone's talking, and you're like, yeah, and some fella won't stop talking. You're like, Christ.
Text it into the Zoom chat. I'm away here, fellas.
But look, let's talk quickly about rugby just to get it out of my system.
So first of all, though, the occasion, it was a lovely occasion. It looked like everybody was buzzing. Just that we kind of little bit smog, little bit weird playing rugby, and then it just felt like the most timeless persona ever. Everybody on this occasion, all the supporters, all the TV guys are all having this amazing time. Carnival atmosphere, celebrations. No one even really cares about the result. They're just loving watching live sport and watching rugby. And then the referees just said, oh, you're all having a good time, are you? You're all offside. We're in charge. They try to ruin the buzz.
They did. They got a bit whistle happy for both games, to be fair. Although I wasn't too bothered because, look, they had made some law changes and they needed to stamp down early, and it was offsides and it was entry at the ruck that they were stamping down on. And that made the defences less in your face, and it made the rucks a little bit more, no one was really taking the piss at the rucks. So it was just like fast ball. And they didn't use the VM, or what's it called? The TMO.
The VPL.
They didn't use the TMO at all. Maybe did they? I don't remember.
Oh no, they didn't, because there was the one try by Leonard Brown, was it? Can't remember. And
Brown passed it. Yeah, it was Dan McKenzie passed it to him. Yeah.
Yes, and that was the one when the ref goes, "Are you happy?" And he goes, "Yeah." It was so he just got caught up in the moment, because it probably was okay, but it was definitely worth having a look at. And then the ref said to Aaron Smith, "Oh, I've got three hippies. Happy try."
Even Leonard Brown, when he was putting the ball down, was like,
"Yes,
yeah." Surely that wasn't a try. But look, I'm, as you said, I don't know. The Super Rugby always has that vibe to it, that it's not too much about who wins the game. It's more about how good this game can be. And watching these two games the weekend, do you reckon there's much we can learn from their presentation of rugby and how it's played? I know this is a conversation that's been going on for years, but I suppose it's more highlighted now when we've had a break, and to see how well they do it, especially when it's just New Zealand teams, and how entertaining and cool, and the amount of young people at these games, like teenagers on the piss, having the crack, and you know, a bit of a party atmosphere. Whereas, I don't know, here, provincial games, there seems to be a lack of that kind of buzz. Would that be fair enough?
Yeah, I know. Probably going to suggest that it could be something like the rearranging the season to make it more of a summer vibe, more of a everybody out enjoying themselves, everybody's always in better form in the summer. Why don't we just play rugby in the summer? That's kind of where you're going, is it?
That is my first option. But outside of that, then I suppose it's making the big games as big as possible. So like this argument has been going on for a while about Leinster versus Munster, especially at Christmas when the teams are picked when most of their teams are having arrests and we don't get to see the best players in the country play. And even the time of year they're played sometimes doesn't lend itself to a very fast, exciting game of rugby. So why not put them in a time of year when there's going to be all the players available and it's more of a, you know, if there's a little bit more sunshine and get the crowds out enjoying dry rugby with a bit of an atmosphere, party season.
Yeah, there's something there. But I think our tendency is always to say, what are they doing that we could be doing better? And there was an element of the weekend, especially the game, the Blues game. They sold out Eden Park. Like, they haven't sold out Eden Park for a Blues game since 2003, apparently. and there was something noticeably different about that Super Rugby game. It was so much more compelling. Obviously, the occasion added massively to it. But there was almost like a European Cup level of intensity, which added as well. So as much as we're saying, what can we learn from them? It's not accidentally, but just coincidentally, they've got a massive crowd. Everybody's like really excited, really buzzing. And there's a level of intensity at that game. And then add to that, then it's, you know, higher standard really than there is in Europe. But the intensity added to it, I thought, and that's a European thing though. That's an Irish thing, actually, especially an Irish thing, really, in European rugby. Fair enough.
Yeah, you're right. It is the occasion. The fact that there hasn't been a game in the world for 3 months definitely lend itself to the crowd and the atmosphere. So a little bit about, yeah, we have the intensity here. I suppose it's the getting the right games that we can highlight how good it is over here, especially the provincial games. And look, we'll see them in August when those games kick off in the Aviva. Obviously, they'll be behind closed doors, but it'll be great to see all the best players in Ireland going head-to-head. But the rugby, some of the rugby at the weekend, as you said, probably the Blues and the Hurricanes, my favourite. And just even this, having all those players in the pitch, like Barrett, Perenara, Coles, Ione, and then the sideline, Umanga, Carter, Carlos Spencer, McDonald, all these superstars that are just like carrying water bottles and stuff. It just massively lended itself to the occasion. Outstanding player, Rike Ione.
Too many vials.
Now, hot take on this. I said this before the World Cup. I think New Zealand struggled in the World Cup because they haven't replaced Conrad Smith and Ma Nanu since they both left New Zealand rugby. They haven't really gotten a 12-13 that have, I don't know, been as massive a threat. Sonny Bill obviously has his moments, as does Goodhue, and as does, who else in the centre for them, Leonard Brown or Crotty. But in the World Cup, they didn't really stand out, didn't really shine. And if I was going up against them personally, I'd be like, yeah, I could manage all of them. If I was playing, I would be confident that any Irish 13 could manage them. Whereas starting Rico Ioione in 13 was lethal. And it's like, this is the game changer for New Zealand.
Yeah, but he's been lethal. He probably took a bit of a dip maybe after the Lions, did he? But he's been pretty lethal on the wing the whole time as well.
Which just having someone in 13 that can create space for everyone out wide, which they've been lacking. And it's not usually you could stick a winger in 13 and he'll get that. But his in and away and his ability to fix defenders at the weekend, get his hands free and offload was spectacular. And he's just so quick, man.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks powerful, doesn't he? Just when he takes off. Yeah. He's New Zealand. I think they can do what they want. Like, I know what you're saying about not replacing those guys in the center, but there's plenty of talent there as well. New Zealand can do what they want, I'd say, and they'll be grand. They'll replace those guys, no problem. McKenzie, I thought was very good for the Chiefs. He's one that gets the crowd behind him because he's the little guy, and I think the little guy always gets a little bit more support. It's nice to see a little guy, you know, Shane Williams and he was pretty class the weekend as well, wasn't he?
Oh, brilliant, man. He hasn't played in a long time either, but yeah, like created 2 tries, got a drop goal, and you thought he kind of had it until Bryn Gatland stood up. What a perfect way to finish that game. Like, you couldn't have asked for more entertainment when the coach...
He bent the drop goal. Like, so he almost like read the way the guy was coming to charge it down.
Yeah.
And he reshaped it to bend it around him.
Yeah. God, I was so shy to drop goals. I'm just so impressed when anyone can do that.
Did you ever take one?
I took one of my first ever under 21 international against Scotland and I hit the corner flag. That was the only ever time I took one. So, did you?
Never once.
Not surprised for some reason. Anyway, any other rugby news? Talking Ireland, players taking a 20% cut in pay. Obviously, that's been since the kind of mid-COVID disaster. But the statement for the Irish Rugby Players Association is that we're very disappointed to see recent media reports about proposed player salary cuts. We're very early phase of discussions with the RFU to establish fully the current and long-term financial position of the union. And only then can the players fully consider any proposal. Rugby Players Ireland will not be commenting further at this time.
So a little bit of a shame that, by contrast, all the positive stuff coming out of New Zealand, and then there's, you know, an argument over pay in Ireland. It's a little bit of a shame.
It is, yeah. I don't know if the RFU have responded to that in any way, but yeah, it is. Look, there's hopefully we'll have more positive news when everyone gets back to training, because that's starting next week, right? Players are back, start focusing on the games, and as you said, yeah, just get us back to normal. And finally, I think rugby news, Fla, our very own Gerry Flannery, signing for Harlequins as the line-out specialist coach for next season, which is an unbelievable move for Fla. I'm delighted with him, or for him, sorry. Yeah, what you think?
Yeah, we did what we could to tarnish his his knowledgeable rugby brand, but he still maintained enough knowledge to get himself a job in rugby.
Yeah, I love when all this started in March, and he was like, "I'm going to take a little break for a while." Obviously, he started negotiating then, or started his chat then, so he couldn't tell us. And even when we'd Mike Brown on, remember Mike Brown was kind of sniffing around afterwards when we were on the off the phone with him, and he was like, "Oh, what's Flannery up to?" I was like, all adding up. But yeah, great move for him. He'll be missed, obviously. But we must get him on the call once the season starts over there. See how they're going. But right, we'll be back in part two with David Kilcoyne. As I said, marinating across the road. I can smell him from here. Oh, before that, here's our new song, Hermitage Green. We released a brand new song, Big Smell of Nostalgia off this. It's called Lake Winnipesaukee. Get it into your ear holes. And all penguins out there, I'd really appreciate it if you went on the old interweb and listened to it and gave it a few spins and spread the love. Thank you very much.
Is Lake Winnipesaukee anywhere near Aotearoa in New Zealand?
Yeah, I think Alexa's been having a few issues with people from Limerick. From Limerick trying to say, Lake Winnipesaukee. I should have called it just Lake. Anyway, have a listen. Let me know what you think. Take me back. All right, welcome to the show, David Kilcoyne. Killer, how are you? How has lockdown been treating you?
Thanks for having me, Baz. Yeah, I'm great. Obviously, it's been an incredibly strange time, tough time for a lot of people. But look, we've adjusted, I think, as everyone has had to, and, you know, just make the best of a bad situation.
So what have you been doing to make the best of it?
I suppose probably the same as most people else, glued to things like Save the Last Dance, you know, listen to a couple
Save
of podcasts. just doing reading books, chilling out in the house, doing a lot of training here in the house. Now with the restrictions lifted, it's been a lot better. Like, you know, we're myself, JJ Hanrahan and Ronan Mahoney, we're all living in Evanwood, so we had a little training group here, and now we're able to train down in Bowes and into Castletroy Park, which has been great.
Yeah, I've never gotten a more resounding response from people when I've asked them for a little bit of crack on a player. Your teammates came back with just an abundance of crack. Yeah, actually, JJ said to me that he wanted me to ask you about those weight sessions that you've been doing at home. He said you've been doing two weight sessions a day and been bragging about it, whereas in fact you've just been splitting the one weight session into two 13-minute weight sessions.
Look, you got to take what JJ says with a pinch of salt. He's losing his mind as long as he's along with the hair, like so. No, look, we have a good little training group here now with JJ, me and Ronan, which has been very good.
So do you do it out in the green?
We do it out the back. We bought stuff from Elvery's, and in fairness to Munster, they were very good to us. They gave us good bit of equipment. So between the two of us, we pretty much have a full gym to do the 2 13-minute sessions a day out there.
Do you get fired up, Killer? Is it competitive with no output at the weekend to play? Is it competitive with the boys?
It actually, I'll tell you what, Primby, Ronan O'Mahony, who retired 2 years ago now with his ankle, he's got mad into the CrossFit. You've done a couple of sessions with him, Baz, and he's been kind of
a freak.
Yeah, he's turned into an absolute monster. He's probably in better shape now than he's ever been. And he's been doing a couple of sessions with us, Joe, trying to keep it, mix it up with a couple of CrossFit things. And from that point of view, it has been competitive. So it is, it's something, you know, you don't have the game at the weekend, so you need something. So Ron O'Mahony is our go-to now at the moment.
Yeah, and you're back to training next Monday. So how are you feeling going into it? Are you feeling very fit, feeling kind of fresh, feeling strong?
Yeah, the body is feeling great, actually. I picked up a shoulder injury against England. And, you know, I suppose taking the positives out of it, you know, I've had this time to get it right. You know, that's the way you got to look at it. Obviously, you want to be playing every week. But, you know, I got an injection in my shoulder. I wasn't able to do it initially over the whole COVID thing. They weren't taking appointments in the regional. But when things started to free up a bit, I was able to get that and settle it down. So, yeah, body's raring to go and can't wait to meet all the lads on Monday and get back into it.
And do you know what your plan is for the week? Is it back to pre-season training, kind of, as you know, as disgusting as I remember it? Is it that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I presume it's going to be day one Bronco test and we go from there. I was telling you about that yesterday. Yeah, so nothing much has changed. You know, it's got, I think, 4 weeks on, 1 week off, hopefully 3 weeks on, and then again at the end of that. So,
wow, that is an intense fucking 7 weeks, isn't it? So I suppose you can start with a regular preseason then, because it is normally that long. So it's good to kind of ease your way into it, because I heard a lot of people in New Zealand kind of wondering whether the players would have had enough contact, had enough, you know, time, yeah, in contact basically before going into what was a pretty intense weekend, whereas you'll have plenty of time to work up to that.
Yeah, we will. Look, we're on our 3 weeks essentially holidays now, but we were, before we broke up, some of the forwards and the backs were giving out tackle shields, like the front rows were giving the low ones and stuff to do, mimic contact as best you could at home. So I'm living with my housemate here, Ronan Butler, so I had him holding the pad where people were looking at us like two lunatics hitting the oak. But.
And come here, the season itself that we've just moved on from, kind of stop start for you. You've never really had an injury, but that was your first one coming out of the World Cup. So that must have been a bit frustrating. But take me back to before the World Cup. You were probably one of the most informed players going into the World Cup from the warm-up games. The World Cup itself then, was that a frustrating time for you? I mean, it must have been enjoyable as well, but was it frustrating?
Yeah, look, I think every rugby player targets the World Cup, you know, it's once every 4 years. So it obviously, you know, you set out your goals at the start of the year, short-term, medium, long-term, and going to the World Cup and, you know, obviously trying to win a World Cup was my goal. So going in there, I felt in great form and great nick, and you know, you get there then, and obviously I really enjoyed the tournament. I was happy, you know, with my contributions, I suppose, but you ultimately want to be playing more and more. You know, we didn't get the results, didn't go our way, so you know, it was a very frustrating tournament. But then I suppose you get back into Six Nations and then it's blown up over COVID. So it's tough enough to keep that momentum going. But, you know, we're into big, long pre-season now. And hopefully we finish off this Six Nations, which I think is vitally important, because I really think we have a great chance of it.
Keller, was there a review period, or did they go around the players and get some feedback on a few thoughts about the way, like, the way the plan was put together or anything? Was there anything kind of identified? Because, like, if the team don't do it internally, then they just leave it to external journalists who really don't have a clue what's going on. So the same thing happened in 2007, and then everybody's speculating, but the guys who know, was there anything done like that after the World Cup?
Yeah, 100%, you know. I think Faz, you know, he's been there, done it all, you know, league and union, and You know, he understands the game so well. You know, we brought it in, we talked it out, long, we really talked it out, and then came up with a couple of solutions and tried to ride him for the Six Nations. And I think we were really starting to find our feet. You know, I think we started well. You know, that England game wasn't our best performance, but I thought we were on an upward trajectory. And unfortunately, the COVID broke, and you know, it stifled things. But we did a big internal review, Trimby.
It's funny how it's always small things. It's never like the bit we got this all massively wrong. It's just, I'm thinking like, so World Cup 2007 and then World Cup 2011. And the learnings from 07 was, let's keep the players more stimulated, keep them out and about, keep them more in the mix and kind of having more fun, which just effectively meant change hotels more often, you know, and something as trivial as that ended up being a successful World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. But it's true. You know, you can... The World Cup has become, I suppose, such a pressure pot now for Ireland to perform. And when, you know, you don't hit the ground running, you know, that pressure builds and builds. And, you know, it's how you probably handle that. And maybe we didn't handle that as best we could.
Come here, take me back. You mentioned Bowes there a few minutes ago, and you're heading down to Anicotti to train there, back where it all started. Yeah, under eights, I presume. Yeah.
Under eights,
Our fathers played together. I think my dad said you've
me and your father emceed many a bus for the under-20s over the years. He was we had a very successful 20s team there for 2 years, and
two All Irelands, right?
Two All Irelands, yeah. And your dad was very quick to jump on the bandwagon. every way trip, Nicky was in giving the team talk. It was an incredible time.
Yeah, your dad. My dad said you stole your nickname off your dad because he was renowned for being an absolute filth bag on the pitch back in the day.
Sure. I'm still going home, and he goes, every single day, it's I'm the real killer. That's how he introduces himself to people. I'm like, okay, that's my dad.
Trimby, if you know Castle Troy at all, I'll be down by Castle Troy Shopping Centre going for, you know, just driving to the shop sometime, and I'll see this fella coming towards me with a sombrero on, a pair of Bermuda shorts, and an Ireland vest top that's clearly killers. And I'm like, who is this lunatic? And it's usually Pat Kilcoyne that's coming towards me, big mad hitting him. So you didn't lick it off a stamp, did you?
Yeah, so my mum and dad would go for a walk every evening, and you don't see my mother because she's about 20 paces ahead of my father. He's back struggling to keep up in the sombrero and the Munster school jersey from 2000.
Yeah, oh, I love it. He's an absolute character, man. But yeah, then you went on to, I suppose, Munster Academy, and then I had the pleasure of coaching you for 2 years, maybe?
2 years,
Before you kicked on from Munster. So what were you then? That was 2010 and 2011.
So our first, do you ever remember our first? It was I was with the 20s, and I was called in. I think we were playing Cork Con around, I'll give you a funny story before we get into the serious stuff. We were playing Cork Con, and I got called into the senior team, and we won the game, and it was around Halloween. And we were like, feck it, what we do? And I don't know who came up with it anyway, said we'll go to Galway after beating Cork on. And we had a break for the week after it. So obviously you were driving the crack back then at the time. And I was like a young 19-year-old. I was like, oh, unbelievable. Can't wait to get involved now. So I was like, we've no costumes. And you were like, I think I said to you, I have a gorilla costume. Went home, tried it on. It was too small for me. So you're like, I'll take that. Granddad was like, okay, what am I going to wear? And you were putting two and two together. So we're like, I have the costume for you. So we called your mother's house, and you went up and you got your mother's wedding dress, I believe. And we went
up. Whoa. If you're going to say you fitted into my mother's wedding dress.
She was obviously back in great nick back in the day. Like,
thinks you're a lovely boy killer. She's gonna hate.
I know, sure. I don't know if she still knows where that wedding dress was gone. I remember we were walking through Galway anyway, as the bride and groomzilla, like, And every pub we were going into, whatever the wedding dresses were back in the day, the veil was about 20 meters behind me. So everyone kept standing on it as I was going up the stairs. I was like, no, I can't stick this. So I'm behind the bar, and I got a knife and I cut it into like a mini dress. So by the end of it, myself and myself were going around in your mother's mini dress / wedding dress and the gorilla suit.
Well, actually, before that, we were in another pub, and you were thrown out of the other pub. And I think it might have been the Keys or something, a big pub in Galway. And I was looking across the bar, and I could see you being escorted down the stairs by the bouncers. And you had the front of the wedding dress in your hands like a bride would. And then the two bouncers were behind you holding the back of your your wedding dress.
I think I was shouting at them, don't get that dirty. Don't ruin my day.
Yeah, obediently, like escorting you out while like two bridesmaids holding your wedding dress. That was phenomenal. Yeah, I remember that very well. I don't think you were even that young, man. I think you were mid-20s back then.
I was 20s.
What was Barry like as a coach, Killer?
Yeah, he was very good. Trimby, he was. You'd been recently out of the game, Baz. So you know, I think that's the beauty of someone who recently comes out of the game. You know, you're very in tune with. You know, you knew the latest calls, the latest plays. You implemented a lot of what we were doing with Munster and with Bowes, and yeah, very good.
Threw a lot of dummies back in his day. Barry did. I imagine that would be a strong point of his coaching.
Sure, that's all I had, yeah.
I was at the sale game. I hopped the wall.
Ah, there you
go. Sounds like everyone hopped the wall back in the day.
Hopped the wall
for that. Try, yeah.
Well, come here. I think Declan Kidney, when I went into coaching, Declan Kidney rang me and he said it's all about the players you have in your coaching. I think we were blessed with the team we had for Bowes that year. We got promoted. Cully Tucker was the head coach. I was assistant coach, and it was yourself, Kyle Sheridan, Tommy O'Donnell, JJ Hanrahan, Dave Foley, Sean Henry. So we had six or seven, you know, professionals playing with us. So it was an absolute pleasure to coach you. And I just remember Cully telling me, like, every time we get into a 22, we had a call, which was a lemon off a line out. And it was, I think it was a down and a drive, but you kept changing the call as the ball was going into the line out. Cancel. Just get me an appeal so you can get your hands in the ball. He was, what did he call it? Greedy ball. Cause you were just the most greedy player in the world. You wanted to carry every time. But I suppose that's led on to you being one of the most aggressive carriers of a ball in Irish rugby. So obviously that's something you pride yourself on.
Yeah, look, I always try and, you know, back then I suppose the greedy ball term, thank God that didn't stick. I remember Kyle Sheridan actually say I'd been nearly tripping him up. He was in playing scrum half at the time. I'd been nearly tripping him up, going to the roughs, going, no, stay out. Yeah, look, it's something, you know, if you can give momentum to the team and it helps the team, like I'm happy to do that. You know, I think everyone... has strengths and weaknesses in their game, and sometimes we can focus too much on our weaknesses, which is obviously something you need to do when you're work on. But at the same time, you got to go to your strengths, and ball carrying probably has been a strength of mine over the years, and it's something that I need to keep developing.
So confidence is a big thing for you, and kind of exuding confidence kind of that you're, I suppose, I remember a particular story about you calling up a Buccaneers player that you were going to be playing the following weekend and scrummaging against. Is this true?
And this again is back under 20s. Baz, you can't be key. You obviously just went to one source for all these stories yesterday. The under 20s lads.
And exuding a lot of confidence on him, telling him that you were going to destroy him next weekend. Is this true?
No, I can't answer that now.
We'll let you off the hook. But come here, when it kicked into to playing for Munster regularly, what was the transition like for you coming out of academy? Was that, you know, I suppose into a pretty pretty successful team, pretty successful front row? Was that very exciting for you, and how challenging was it for you to make that breakthrough?
It was incredibly exciting, and it was incredibly tough to break into the team. You know, when I broke into that pack, you know, it was myself, it was first of all you had Marcus Vian, and then below that, you know, you would have had Dara Hurley, Dave Ryan, who were quite hotly tipped at the time to take over, And then you would, on the other side, you would BJ, John Hayes, you would like Severely, Flad just retired with his calf. But you, Paulie, Dunners, Mikko, you know, you can keep going through all the names, but that was the kind of pack you were trying to break into. We actually, so I would have done 2 years. I didn't get into the academy till I was quite late. So I played those 2 years of Bowls under 20s. And Ian Sherwin, he didn't want to let me into the academy at the time. And Ian Costello fought my case. He went down with clips from and got me in. So I owe Kazi a big one for that. And I did 2 years in the academy till 22, and then I went straight into a full contract. On the back of we had a very good BNI Cup side, would have had would have had the likes of Sherry Archer, Peter O'Mahony, you know, Dave O'Callaghan, a lot of lads that would have gone on, Dave Foley, Nags, Murray, a lot of lads that would have gone on to play for Munster. And those sessions back then between the eight side, to be like, I'll always remember Dumper was in charge, and Axel Lend, you need to, like the scraps that used to be a training between the BNI Cup side and the senior team. It was just incredibly, incredibly, I suppose, tough team to break into, and every session was just very tough. Like, you know, you'd really earn your stripes back then to break into the team. So I think that stood to a lot of the, that crop of players going forward, you know, likes of Peter O'Mahony, likes of Murray, Sherry Archer, etc.
Yeah. Were you on the bus that time when Paulie took his teeth out? We've told that story before, when you all strapped yourselves into the back of the bus. Yeah, that was very much a changing of the guard moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, I actually think we had that chant going, get the corpse off the bus or something crazy like that. That was the change of the guard. I think we started calling Paulie the corpse.
Yeah, you had a megaphone and signs and everything, like you were picketing, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. I remember those times. It was a pretty special time in Munster, like to have that I don't know.
Munster were just in the back at a Magnus League win in 2011. And
it was
very exciting. It was, you know, a place we need to get back to.
Yeah, is that, how is that kind of compared over the last 7 or 8 years in terms of competition for places? Is that, I know that's very difficult for any team to get to that level, but is has it been anywhere close to that?
I think rugby as a whole has probably changed, you know, like, that Munster pack probably didn't change for how many years, you know, maybe 5-6 years that pack was the exact same 1-8, like, you know, bar the odd change here and there. Now, I suppose it's maybe more games in the season, and it's just become ultra competitive for spots now. And, you know, we probably have a lot more signings, you know, foreign signings in now. So the squad does change quite a bit from week to week, whereas, you know, when you're trying to break into that team back in 2011, 2012, you're literally trying to take a fella's position who's been starting there for 4 or 5 years. Whereas now, you know, your position's essentially up for grabs every week. Now, I know it was back then, but it just seems there's a lot more rotation, and you get a lot more chances probably now.
Mm. What was the relationship like with, like, yourself or Horn or someone that has been there that long and see someone like you coming up? Would he have been hard on you? Was it a cold relationship, or really would he have been good to you, I suppose? Because sometimes it can get pretty weird among specialist positions, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, at the end of the day, everyone's playing for a livelihood. Like, you know, you're playing for your position. Me and Marcus are actually cousins, believe it or not. Yeah, yeah. So,
wow, makes so much sense.
Yeah, we would have been... we would have been quite close. Like, you know, when I was in the academy, sub-academy, Max would have been great. And then VN was in at the time as well. So for my first, the 2012 season when Rob Penny took over, VN was that. So I'd, end of my first season, I had kind of broken on as second choice behind VN. And then Rob took over. And then so VN started the following season as first choice, and then Marcus was on the bench. And then, you know, as a young lad always does, you know, I went into Rob and I was saying, you know, I was second choice last year, and you know, I thought I'd an excellent preseason, and to be honest, I was expecting to be kind of first choice going into that season. But Rob was, you know, an incredibly good for young lads. You know, he worked with that New Zealand 20s team, and he's a great rugby brain. You know, and he sat down with me. We went through the clips, and Marcus actually pulled out and first game of the season with a back spasm. And he rang me and he was like, well, you got your wish, you're on the bench. And then I came on in that game. And then from there on, I started, that was kind of my breakthrough season. I came on in that game and I started every game then for the rest of the season, pretty much.
That I would imagine that style of coaching would have suited you, Killer. It would have been a nice way to get started. A little bit of wide. I remember like Donica found himself out in the wide channel quite a bit, and like it mightn't have suited him as much, but for lads like you who just love a wee bit of space, that probably would have been a great great starting point for you with Munster.
Yeah, 100% Trimby. He played, it was pack shape, we used to call it back then, PACK, you know, 2-4-2 similar. Rob, I think, was nearly a bit ahead of his time. You know, they were doing that in Canterbury and the Crusaders, and I'd give him the odd phone call now, and I actually met him over in Japan, and he's taken over the working over in Sydney. So no, he was in great form, and yeah, I loved playing that system. You know, I think we're actually kind of playing a bit more like that as the years have gone on. You know, Munster in Ireland now, and it's back in rugby players to play the space, and it's great to see. You know, Faz is a huge believer in it as well. You know, it's nearly not shape. You're playing what's on, like.
Yeah. I remember even back then when I was still coaching, it was watching players like yourself and front row players touching the ball and passing the ball 5 or 6 times a game and doing those out the back door passes. And we were talking about earlier on in watching New Zealand rugby over the weekend that playing with a lot of dry ball and in the conditions over there, you see a lot of it. So what do you reckon for the big games in August, the whole of Irish rugby is going to be basically on show. Do you reckon it's going to be the aim of the game is to play exciting rugby and you know, throw the ball around and give us a spectacle?
I think it's playing, you know, what's on. You know, Steve Larkham has been incredible for us here at Munster. You know, we probably missed a bit being at the World Cup and then at the Six Nations. So as you were saying, you know, that's another opportunity COVID has allowed us. We've done a couple of Zoom calls with Steve, and he's been, you know, really clear in his messages about how we want to play. And I think you'll see Munster and as Leinster have been playing, you know, really playing an expansive game plan. Johan's really backing it, like, so it's great.
Brilliant. Can't wait. And come here, you've bought a house in Lahinch, right? So I was talking to you the other day that your plan is to get down there and get your hands dirty over the next couple of months. Me and Trimby are the two most useless people in the world at DIY, we've realized. How are you fixed going into a project like that?
Yeah, so I bought the house about two and a half years ago now. And it's in a great location. You know, it's up kind of the old school road, but there's a lot of work needs to be done to it. Just needs remodernizing. So if the two of you are looking for a bit of part-time work, if this podcast gets low ratings after this, I'll have plenty of work for you to do. But yeah, that's the plan. Myself and my dad are actually going to go direct labor and do it ourselves.
Right. Yeah. So you've done this before?
No, never.
Brilliant.
But my dad has, yeah. So
just wing it.
Mickey could be getting the call yet.
Back to old school training, like Rocky-esque pre-season training, just lifting blocks and
carrying up and down to the beach in Lynch.
Yeah. Tops off. Love it. Well, look, if you do, I'll be down there anyway, so I'll drop the head in someday for a look. Look, Killer, we've been delighted to have you on. We've been waiting for this for ages. So thanks a million, man. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a million for having me, lads. Really appreciate it. Big fan of the show.
Legend.
Good man, Killer.
Best of luck with pre-season starting next week, and we can't wait to see you back in the field carrying ball.
Thanks a million, lads.
Cheers, killer. Man.
See you later.
Have a good day.
COVID-19 or coronavirus is here. By taking a few simple steps, we can slow the virus down and help protect everyone. Wash your hands more often, for at least 20 seconds with soap and water. If you cough or sneeze, use a tissue or cover your mouth with your elbow, then bin the tissue and wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose and mouth, and keep surfaces clean. Distance yourself at least 2 metres, 6 feet away from other people, especially those who might be unwell. Stop shaking hands or hugging when saying hello or greeting other people. For updated factual information and advice, go to hse.ie or call 1850 24 1850. Protection from coronavirus. It's in our hands.
Okay, no classics for you this week, ladies and gentlemen, but instead we are joined by, as you can see, Sam the Sick Penguin Brown. Last time we spoke to him was early doors in COVID-19. It was about early April. He was our first confirmed penguin with COVID-19. He had just recovered. He had a heavily pregnant missus. How heavily pregnant is she now, and how are you doing?
I'm grand. A bit pastier and fatter and poorer since we last spoke, but otherwise really good. My fiance Alwyn, is she's sort of like Humpty Dumpty with arms and legs at this point. And our little one will be popping out, hopefully.
In the next week or so, if my maths serve me right.
Yeah. So she technically due on the 25th, but like she's full term now, so she might just surprise appearance at any time. Who knows?
Amazing. I had promised our listeners and viewers earlier on that we might have a live home birth during the show today. But now that we're here, I'm like, please don't make that happen.
I've bundled her off to the midwife so that she can't roll her eyes at me while I'm recording this.
that would be a nice little season finale. Everything just building up to this little baby penguin was born, and then you could have a cliffhanger where you don't find out the sex, and you're like, tune in next time for season 3.
I kind of wish we hadn't told anyone the sex, because obviously it's a wee girl. So we've just had, really kindly, we just had donations of clothes from all over the world, friends, family, well-wishers. And we've got like a hay bale of baby clothes at this point that we need to kind of sort through and wash. And like Owen keeps picking them up and showing me and going like, oh, look. And I mean, I'm really excited about being a dad and having a baby and things, but I don't have it in me to feel anything for a tiny pink baby grove. So I've been working on faking my reaction. You know, going, oh.
Yeah. That wears you down, man, over time. That doesn't change. It gets worse, doesn't it? You're like, I don't care. It's just going to shit all over it anyway. It doesn't matter what it looks like. You'll be out of it in an hour.
We've got so many baby groves. I don't think we need nappies. I think we can just have single-use baby groves and throw them out the window.
Out the window. So you've been baby-proof in the house, I presume, and turning it from less of a man pad into a baby pad.
It doesn't, yes. To be fair, Sam, it doesn't look that baby-proof at the minute. there is a skull with very sharp horns and some tribal spears hanging dangerously on the wall.
I accept that point. You'll notice that they are safely mounted to the wall. So unless the baby is very tall and very mobile, she's not going to be pulling those off.
I've got little corks on the top.
Yeah, no, that was, I've lived in the same apartment for about 11 years now, and like my work would usually take me overseas for about 6 months of the year, so it's literally just sort of gone to, you know, it's got a sofa and a TV and that's pretty much all I needed. But my fiance made it very, very clear to me that that was not acceptable moving forwards, so I've had like big old job on my hands since we last spoken, kind of, yeah, trying to make it less of a crack den and more of a family home. Not a little crack den.
It's looking good. Well, look, last time we had you on, we were talking about Leon the movie, and you schooled us a little bit on how to review a movie, and then we found out afterwards that you were actually a film documentary maker. And we were like, Jesus Christ, why didn't we get into that with it? Or why didn't we just ask you the question beforehand? So Yeah, give us your IMBD. Have you got an IMBD?
Yeah, I do. I do. I don't know if it's right up to date, but so basically, I mean, I've been a freelance documentary maker for, God, how long? About 14, 15 years now. And I mean, I'll be like brutally honest, most of the stuff I make is sort of shite to pay the mortgage.
Same here, Sean.
There's been a couple of good ones done in the years. I've done a lot of, I've sort of fallen into like sort of adventure survival type programs a lot of times. So like years ago, I did one of the first series of Bear Grylls, The Island. So I was like running around in a grass skirt with a camera, slaughtering animals. What else?
Tell us about that, because we just looked that up and I watched one series of that. Were there a few series of that?
I think they're still doing it. They're doing it celebrities now, for like a shorter period of time. We did one of the first ones before they'd done any of the health and safety. So they put it, they literally put us on an island filled with crocodiles and cliffs and like all kinds of sort of carnivorous flies and things. So yeah. it was class. It was 40 days and like really, really intense. And
where was it?
Just off, it was in the Pacific coast off Panama. So wow. Proper like tropical island. It was really cool. Like it was, and you know, it was a little bit like lockdown, you know, it was the same people every day for 40 days and everyone's just sort of steadily coming apart at the seams and going a bit doolally.
Was that the one, Sam? Was that the one where you killed the caiman by any chance?
It wasn't actually a caiman. It turns out it was a critically endangered American crocodile, which is actually, it's on the same protected list as the snow leopard. So Channel 4 ended up having to spend quite a lot of, I think there were quite a lot of donations to endangered animal charities after that.
Shit.
Oh, so, because it did, because you were, everybody was very hungry at that stage. I don't know how long you'd gone without eating. And then it went from that to like this barbecued caiman, this absolute feast. And then there was the inevitable kind of tension between one or two guys who were like, oh, it's a beautiful, you know, creature. We can't eat this. And then everybody was like, it would eat us and we're starving.
It's like my cat. I keep saying this about the cat, lads. If I died, the cat would eat me.
Cats wait like 3 hours or something. Dogs will like sort of loyally sit by your feet and just sort of howl until you're carried away. So that was the last big old sort of adventure. What else have I done? There was another survival one we did for Channel 4 was sailing. It was recreating Mutiny on the Bounty. So it was basically taking a 21-foot rowboat and sailing it 4,000 miles across the South Pacific from Tonga through the Great Barrier Reef to Indonesia, which took 60 days. So that was a big old schlep.
Wow.
Yeah, where again, we ran out of water and all went buck daft, which was not in any way pleasant to have done, but it's a nice one to boast about at dinner parties.
Yeah, like by the end of that, you're like, what's the last 20 days like and something like that?
So it was sort of paranoia, kidney damage. And so I was about 10 stone by the time we finished, having gone from like 12 and a half, 13. Wow. And just bonkers. Yeah, that was a tricky one.
Hey, Sam, you're more hardened and kind of cut out for that sort of stuff than I was. Like I, even the World Cup in 2011, but I was dying to get home. I was glad we got beat by Wales. Otherwise we would have had to play two more rounds.
you're paranoid and losing weight and everything as well.
Yeah.
Scurvy. Yeah, and then sure we had scurvy by the quarterfinals.
Then the last thing I did before my industry got sort of exploded by COVID was it was a documentary about the first African American guy to get a full face transplant.
Oh yeah. And,
so that was out and I was talking to Trimble actually during that. Just this guy who he was in a terrible car crash and had his whole face burnt off, and they've pioneering surgery. He's now got like you wouldn't know Like he said,
really, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, he looks a bit odd, like slightly scrambled in the face department. But like you'd never guess it was a face transplant, and you'd never guess, you know, he'd be late 60s, and he looks about my age now.
Really?
So he got someone else donated their face that had died, a younger person.
Yeah. I don't think they had much say in the matter. They were just on the toilet.
They didn't opt out.
How much does it cost to get something like that?
It turns out that the US military have, because I think they have a vested interest in trying to put people's faces back on, because they'd probably, per capita, the military would probably lose more faces than the general public. So it was all funded by the US Army. But I would imagine
it's very difficult to source that sort of data. Who loses the most faces right here?
I thought this was a conspiracy here, like where it was like face off, where they were going to try and steal the faces off people and put them on other people, and then, you know, try and hang them up for doing something.
Did you watch that for research?
I don't think so. Don't think the technology is quite there yet.
John Travolta didn't look that scrambled.
What a movie.
Yeah. Should have reviewed that, actually.
Yeah. So, I must look that up. I'm mad to see what he looked like. Just to have it as an option, just, you know, if it ever...
Yeah, I wouldn't go down that road unless absolutely necessary. He's a guy called Robert Chelsea. You can Google it and you see the before and after. Really amazing, like really inspiring guy. Like one of the least sort of very religious guy, and just very at peace with the world. You know, like he was. Most people who suffer that kind of injury would have like massive depression. You know, there's a lot of suicides and that kind of thing. But he just had this like sort of incredible faith where he, you know, just, you know, he's like, this is the path God's chosen for me. I'm going to make myself a better man, kind of thing. That was very genuinely, genuinely humbling to meet someone like that.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Sam,
inspiring to work on.
What? So you said there, like obviously the last few months, then the industry just gets locked down. What way is that looking? Because they're talking about very selfishly. They're talking about cinemas opening. Pretty soon, maybe they are in London already, I'm not sure, but will there be good movies like for the next year? Obviously, like everything's been stalled, and what way is that going to look in the industry?
I look at my bit the most, because, you know, I've got to pay the mortgage and things, and mine will probably be one of the last bits of the industry to recover, I reckon, because most of my work's overseas. So it's like visas and quarantines and all that palaver. It's dependent on the virus going away sufficiently for people to be able to ensure productions, kind of thing. I think there's going to be a bit of movie wise. I think there'll be a lot of stuff being cancelled or sort of mothballed. So I think there is going to be a bit of a dearth of stuff for a while, unfortunately. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's time to have a baby though, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like last time we spoke, I said I was going to try and finish Netflix, and I think I did. I think just that sort of the TV binging sort of lost its edge.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I haven't finished is documentaries. I haven't really jumped into them over the last couple of months. It's been basically movies and TV shows. So if you were to, because we've usually used this part as a way to recommend stuff or review stuff, would you give us your top three or even your top documentaries that you've ever seen?
Shit, I had since yesterday to think about this.
And you didn't. Give us one. Anything you got.
Let me think. There's a really good, is it Ken Burns Netflix series on the Vietnam War, which is like a good old binge, like it'll be about 8 hours long. The OJ one from a couple of years ago, if you haven't already, the big three,
yeah, that's great.
9 hours, absolutely. Just me and my flatmate sat down to watch the first one a couple of years ago, and then we got to the end of 3.5 hours and we're like, should we just watch one, just we'll watch the first hour of the second one, And then sure enough, we watched the whole three back to back. So I had to go straight from my sofa to work. I just like, oh dear. They're like, you look terrible. Were you out drinking? I was like, no. I just watched TV on that.
OJ's at it again.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, shamefully, when you know, like it's sort of because it's my industry, I don't really watch as much as I should. You know, it's a bit of a busman's holiday. So like I'd probably watch more like stupid rugby clips on YouTube than I would documentaries.
Yeah, me too. Well, I think why don't we do a rugby documentary if we're all stuck on our respective islands? Why don't you come home and we'll put our minds together, collaborate, and do a rugby documentary?
You know, I've been thinking about that actually. Like, I'd absolutely love to. Like, I don't think like there's been like there's the 97 Lions one that everyone always talks about, which mm-hmm. I watched again a couple of years ago. Like the Lions in 97 would have probably been what really got me into rugby in the first place. Mm-hmm. And when you watch it again, it's not that good.
Is it not? It was just the first of its time, right?
Yeah. One of the sort of lasting images for me was kind of Keith Wood in a dress with a wig and Martin Johnson in a dress and a wig. It's sort of loads of people going, ho, 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 banter. I still remember it. Like my mum wouldn't let us get Sky Sports when I was a kid. So I listened to it on like a really crackly radio, you know, like, and wow. I was kind of writing down the score and stuff.
Teletext would have been back then.
Yeah, that was the 1999 World Cup. I watched quite a lot of it on teletext because, again, my mum wouldn't let me get the channel.
Jesus, that sounds like proper 1920 stuff.
My memory of that Lions tour was, or that documentary. Who was it said one case of a mistaken identity? Do you remember this? They were doing like media training, and they're like, you were spotted outside a nightclub the night before a game, and then there's a Scottish player. Well, it wasn't Donny Weir, was it? One case of mistaken identity. Everybody erupts, and then like that's the one liner. Yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah, that's all I remember. That's all I remember. I don't remember the banter of the men dressed as women.
Hilarious.
Yeah, do it again, fellas.
Well, I think we're definitely going to go to South Africa whenever the Lions might kick off, whether if it's next June or next September. They're talking about. So look, let's put it in the pipeline. Let's do it. Let's and get out and make it more about us having the crack and the safari, as opposed to dressing up like women.
Which is
totally fine.
We're not going to go anywhere near any rugby. It's the documentary is going to be called Living Without the Lions.
Yeah.
So perfect. Tune in next time. Yeah. Sam, so we're kind of keen to get you on, but we're kind of in apology mode, really, just because we were getting on like we're movie critics, right? and we got you on and we just talked about your sickness, really. Yeah, which was obviously very current at the time. But would you give us a quick review of our reviews? Because we're inclined to think that we haven't a clue what we're talking about. But we hope we're aware of that, and we hope we're not taken too seriously. Are we getting the right sort of vibe, or capturing anything correct with these movie reviews?
Well, look, at the end of the day, like, movies are, they're there to be like consumed and enjoyed, right? You know, they're not made for, you know, snooty film critics to, you know, make like highfalutin comparisons to philosophy and things, you know. And I've loved everything you've done, because we seem to like, we're about the same age, so we have the same kind of like double shot of nostalgia and then just sort of random observations. So I think you nailed Braveheart, for example. I thought that was class. Yeah. No, I'm absolutely, I don't act like, you know, superior in any way in that respect, you know, because I love movies, not from a, you know, like you get, I can be boring to watch movies from sometimes, because I'll notice like if the continuity is wrong or something. But generally, that's only if it's not a good movie, you know, like a good movie, whatever it's about will sweep you up and you'll just be like, you know, it's just escapism and you just enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, the last movie that I felt that, and as you say, it just sweeps you up. There's something you can't describe with it. Was 1917. I went to see that at the cinema with a mate of mine, and literally 30 seconds into it, we turned to each other and we're like, "This is class. I'm totally captivated in this." And like nothing's happened, and I don't know what it is. There's just something indescribable about it. Just whenever something really grabs you, But that's the last Christopher, time that's happened.
That's Christopher Nolan again, right?
Yeah,
yeah. He's our hero, so he can do no wrong. Yeah, you a big fan of his?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a few sort of commercial directors who haven't made a dud. So like Danny Boyle, like all of his movies are like, so they're really different. Like a Christopher Nolan movie, loads of his are really different as well. You know, I read somewhere that a really good, like a top director will make 3 good movies. A great director will make 5, you know, like you're lucky if you make 1. I think Christopher Nolan would be pushing towards 5 easily, like a couple of Batmans, Memento. I really like The Prestige, you know, the one about the 2 buildings, which I was doing that hard sell to my fiance, because like there's obviously a bit of a battle for the remote control in my apartment at the minute, and so I have to really make the case for things, and if I lose we end up watching The OC. So I tried to sell a Prestige to her, and I was like, it's about these 2 wizards, and she's like,
brilliant. Yeah, that's one I haven't watched in a while. Does your missus allow you to get Sky Sports now?
Yes.
So you watched rugby the weekend?
No, I didn't. It wasn't really. I mean, it's... Yeah, I'm gagging for rugby to be back, but equally, I've never been a huge super rugby fan. Like, for me, rugby is like... Ulster, Munster, Leinster, it's Ireland, you know, it's tests, you know, like the internationals are what I miss more than anything. And then obviously having been like grown up in the stands at Ravenhill or Ravenspan or whatever it's called now. It's like the tribal parochial bit of it that really gets me. I'm sort of squeezing in as much sleep as I possibly can at the minute. So getting up early, getting up at 5 a.m. for Super Rugby is not really going to happen.
Yeah, unfortunately, stockpile sleep, man. So it's not going to work.
The New Zealand, the tournament at the minute in New Zealand, though, I'm the same as you, Sam. I find it hard to get into Super Rugby because they changed the parameters, the competition, the pool setup, everything every year, and then they bring in more teams, and I'm like, well, I have no affiliation with that, or no kind of history or nostalgia, or kind of I don't understand, you know, the background. And then whenever they just go 5, it's as close probably to like the New Zealand version of Interpros as possible, and there's a way because it's kind of it's ring fenced, obviously just the 5 teams. I think I can get into that. I think I can get a bit of a knowledge, a bit of understanding of the background of each team and the rivalries and the kind of the subplots going on. I think I can get into that. So I hope they just keep it at that. And then that means it's more accessible then.
I'm the same. I think it's the way forward. Like maybe bring in the Australian teams that might, because there is an existing massive rivalry between Australia and New Zealand, but you do get, you know, the best players in New Zealand playing against each other every week. And you could see it that the crowd are way more buying into that than bringing down maybe sort of African teams, Argentinian teams, Japanese teams. And then they've been on at different times of the day or night where you don't get to see them. So I think we can...
A lot of the Super Rugby I'd have watched, you know, like Australia and South Africa and things, they're franchises rather than teams with any kind of history. And there's something, and I guess we'll have to get used to this. See, when you're watching a match with like an empty stadium or just with a few... like, you know, just pockets of fans here and there, it's so different. Like, it just feels so empty and deflated compared to, you know, when you've got like 70,000 hostile fans like baying, you know, like the atmosphere is so much of it, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the competition that they've gotten wrong. So yeah, hopefully they get it right. But I look like the Irish rugby is going to be back in August. So even though it's going to be behind closed doors, what do you make of that with the I don't know if they're going to put in crowd noise or whatever. I'm not sure that would work for rugby, although it's been working in NRL.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine piped in crowd noise being anything other than weird, like playing sort of FIFA for football on the PlayStation or whatever. But like, I mean, I'm just glad it's back because, I mean, it's, you know, I didn't realize how much, like, how much of my brain was consumed by thinking about live rugby, like this sort of this whole last 3-4 months or whatever. It's really like it's forced me to read books and kind of, you know, pursue new things. It's been awful. Like, so I can't wait to get back to the... I can't wait to get back to the old ways.
Yeah. Me too. Me too. Well, look, what a week, man. We might get you on, I suppose, next week or two when the little baby arrives. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Give us a little look at our young, this will be our youngest penguin to the herd. What's a group of penguins called?
I should know this. I can't remember.
A load of them. A load of penguins. So, look, yeah, best of luck to the two of you over the next week. It's very exciting times. We're delighted for you and, yeah, enjoy it.
Oh, thanks, guys. Really
nice one, Sam.
Thanks a million for coming on, Sam. Appreciate it, buddy. Take it easy.
Bye.
Okay, Trimby, we probably could have wrapped up with Sam there, but we'll do it now anyway. Sorry about that, Sam. I could have left him on to the end, although we would have felt pressured maybe to give him Penguin of the Week or maybe his unborn child. But we instead will give it someone who really deserves it this week. So
yeah, I'd say Sam's unborn child, is probably a shoe-in for Penguin of the Week next week.
I was thinking that. Yeah.
The only way the child won't get it is if she doesn't have birth before 2 episodes time. So that's, and then just logistically, they might get it for the first episode of next season. We'll see what happens.
The ball's in her court.
Yeah. It's hers to lose. So a couple of, a little bit of chat in the Facebook group this week. The Penguins are in fine fettle. There was a picture of a mannequin with a dildo on it, which was, you know, refreshing, lovely. Daniel Gill, someone said, who is this player? Daniel Gill says, that's Paul, middle name Dild O'Connell, which I thought was very clever. Very good.
Very clever.
Daniel, you're in the mix. You're an honorable mention. Bernard McGreer was disgusted with some of the Twitter threats that Jacob was getting, but he misspelt it and he talked about death treats. something very different. Accidentally, you've put yourself in the running there, Bernard. But Kate McGrath, off the back of the putting challenge, was able to find the link for that. What was the backstory to that, Barry?
She found the link to the actual game that Marge Simpson buys Bart in the Simpsons episode where Bart steals a computer game that he wanted to have, but he tried to steal it. It is the Lee Carvalho's putting challenge, which Marge buys him at the end, and he feigns interest to win her love over by playing this computer game. So the Penguin of the Week, what's her name again?
Kate McGrath has done more research finding that link than we've ever done. So well done, Kate.
Unbelievable. Yeah, she found the actual game. So now we have a link to it here and we can go play the game. And I presume it'll be as bad as Bart let it out to be, where he just launches a ball off the tee into the car park, I think. Or no, he's on the putting green and they're like, would you like to select putter? You have selected driving whatever club.
Driver.
Driving club. As bad as golf as who else was bad at golf?
I don't know. I think.
Who did we have on recently that was shit at golf?
It wasn't Hook, was it?
Was it Jacob? Hook?
Oh, we just list all our high profile.
Oh, Tyke Byrne. It was Tyke Byrne. He was shit at golf. Remember?
Oh yeah.
All right. So get on there. We'll put it up on our Facebook page, or is it up there already? And you can play it. It's absolutely shite, I'm sure. Right. Thank you very much. That's your Penguin of the Week. Thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you to David Kilcoyne. Thank you to Sam the Sick Penguin Brown. Thank you to Pat, Paul, Dermot, and Anthony for putting the show together. This has been Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby, here on Joe, together with Guinness Party on Trimby.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.